Hello, and welcome to the first ever live episode of Pop DNA. Thank you for coming, and thank you so much to King's Books for hosting us tonight. I'm Erin.
I'm Rhonda. And this question's kind of silly because there's like six of you here, but how many of you have listened to Pop DNA before?
Yay!
All right.
Oh
wow,
my gosh,
that's like 100% of the audience.
Wow, what a turnout, you guys.
This is amazing.
Oh my God.
So but just, you know, for those folks listening at home, we can explain a little bit. Oh, but did you want to tell them about our Patreon?
So, in addition to our monthly episodes, our Patreon subscribers get bonus features like film commentaries, dramatic readings by us, and access to our unedited show notes, which are sometimes funny and always interesting. You can support our show for as little as $1 a month. What a deal. Oh, my gosh.
So, since you guys already listen, and I'm hoping that people at home listening already know the premise of our podcast, I'll just skip that part. But we are in the middle of a summer series, where we're like doing the opposite of what we usually do.
Yeah.
So we're starting with a classic work.
Yeah.
And going forward,
instead of looking at a work and seeing what has influenced it, we're starting with its influencer and moving forward.
Yeah, up to the now times.
And what's it called? What did you call it?
Literature Summer.
Brilliant.
Do you guys think that's funny? Okay. Or are we like shouting it into a vacuum and no one cares? Okay.
Vacuums understand humor. My vacuum thinks it's very funny. Rhonda.
Well, they do in The Brave Little Toaster.
Yes.
Isn't that like where
the scariest movie I've ever seen? Anyway.
Okay. So we're going to take a quick poll.
Yeah.
Who has read Hamlet the play? Okay, cool. Who has seen a stage production?
Nice.
The correct way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And who has seen a film adaptation?
Lion King.
The Lion King. Yeah, your hand should be up if you've seen The Lion King. There you go.
You know about circles of life.
So for a lot of us, The Lion King was maybe like our first experience with Hamlet.
Yeah.
Would you say that was yours?
Yeah, it certainly was. And then I got to be a theater tech for a like professional production when I was 17. And I saw it like 50 times and nerded out super hard about it. I loved it so much. And all the actors were like, who's this kid who like loves this? But I did. What about you?
The Lion King. But of course, at the time, I didn't know that it was I didn't know what Hamlet was when I was seven.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
But my first like conscious experience with Hamlet was in my 10th grade English class when we studied the play.
Uh-huh.
And it was the same teacher who introduced me to Buffy the Vampire Slayer also introduced me to Hamlet. So very mixed feelings there.
Sure,
But she was like, oh, we're going to watch a film of the play here in class. And we were like, yes. But it turned out that she had like the like 6 VHS tape edition of the Kenneth Branagh Hamlet, which is like 8 hours long because they did not cut anything from the text.
No.
So we spent like a week of class just watching this. And I'm just like, oh, this is. But of course, it does have Kate Winslet and she's perfect. So it wasn't all bad. But that kind of gave me like a sour taste in my mouth for Hamlet.
Sure, yeah.
And I enjoyed other Shakespeare works, though, so.
And I think a lot of people have that, because, well, Hamlet has such a...
I still don't like it.
People have decided that Hamlet is the best play that's ever happened, and, like, I don't think that's true.
Who decided that?
Whoever writes college textbooks, whoever those people are. So just for a little background and context before we jump right into the pop culture, we're going to give some background about Shakespeare himself. And we'll do a quick story recap as well. And then at the end, we do want to open this up to have a little discussion and any thoughts that everyone's having about.
Or if you have questions.
Yeah. Chris.
Yeah.
Or answers for our questions.
Answers for our questions.
I don't know.
Hopefully.
I
have so many questions, you guys. but just a little bit about Shakespeare. So William Shakespeare was born and raised in Stratford-upon-Avon, Warwickshire, England.
Nice.
Ever heard of it, in April of 1564. We don't know the exact date he was born because commoners at that time, there just weren't that many records about their lives. So we don't know a lot about his early life, but he probably went to school, just to guess, in Stratford-upon-Avon, because, you know, he knew how to read and write.
Yeah.
So. he didn't. He didn't know how to read and write. He didn't? Oh, are you one of those conspiracy theorists who thinks that somebody else wrote the works of Shakespeare? You can talk about that at the end if you want. Okay. And then at the age of 18, he married Anne Hathaway. So this is like before the Devil Wears Prada, after Princess Diaries.
She's aged really well.
She has aged
What's
really
her
well.
Secret?
But actually, if you've seen pictures of modern Anne Hathaway's husband, he looks like portraits of Shakespeare.
Witchcraft.
It is wild.
Something's going
okay,
on.
Okay, it's like the Twilight Zone. So so that the other Anne Hathaway and William Shakespeare had three children, Susanna, and then the twins Hamnet and Judith.
Oh, Susanna.
Right? Won't you cry for me? So sometime between 1585 and 1592, which is kind of, that's like his lost years.
Uh-huh. Sure.
He moved to London. So he left his wife and kids behind in Stratford, and he moved to London.
Great.
So he was like, I'm going to go be in the theater.
My dreams, you guys. Right. Got to go.
And so he found success as an actor initially, and then as a playwright, and eventually as a part owner of a players company called the Lord Chamberlain's Men, later known as the King's Men. Yeah, like the movie. Exactly. Louis? Oh, yeah. Yes, that too. Shakespeare, all of that. So he wrote and produced most of his known works in these London years between 1589 and 1613. So his early plays were primarily the comedies and histories. And then in the period between 1595 and 1608, during that time, he wrote like some of his biggest works. So he wrote Hamlet during that time, as well as Othello, King Lear, and Macbeth.
So all the really fun light
all
ones.
Of the yes uh-huh. all the uh-huh. light bedtime like, reading
yeah
so his son Hamnet not Hamlet Hamnet died at the age of 11 in 1596. So it's commonly speculated that his death, which obviously would have had a really big effect on Shakespeare, informed some of the tragic plays which he was writing around that time, including Hamlet, which he wrote in about 1599. And then in his last years in London, so like 1608 to 1613, he wrote what are called tragicomedies, also known as romances. And these are the ones that are classified as the problem plays a lot of the time. So like Merchant of Venice, Measure for Measure.
Yeah.
The weird ones.
Right, right.
And during this time, he also collaborated with other playwrights, which, as we were talking about earlier, like, we don't really talk about that that much. That, like, the Two Gentlemen of Verona, All's Well That Ends Well, he had collaborators for those.
We don't really talk about
like,
that at all.
I couldn't tell you who they were.
Right, absolutely.
But I know that he collaborated on this.
And yet we have so many random details that we know about Shakespeare.
Right.
Like, share the stage, you guys.
And then in 1613, he moved back to Stratford, and he died there 3 years later in 1616, and then was buried in Holy Trinity Church. And he is commemorated in Poets' Corner in Westminster Abbey.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah.
Isn't like Jane Austen there and other people?
I think so. Yeah. They're like Charles Dickens.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows? I'll have to go there and see. Transitioning into Hamlet. So it's important to remember that like all works of fiction, Shakespeare's plays were not written in a vacuum.
Sure.
So he had sources from all over. It was often like legends and folklore from all over Europe. They would originate in the oral tradition, or it would actually be like earlier plays that he would draw from that were based in those legends and folklore that would kind of make their way over to England. But there were also like published books of European folklore that he would have had access to. So in addition to his son's death, the story of Hamlet was derived from the legend of Amleth.
Oh.
Who's a figure in Scandinavian legend.
Okay.
Most famously preserved in writing in the 13th century, though it was around a lot longer before that.
Sure.
He may have also drawn on an earlier 16th century play also called Hamlet.
Oh.
But known today as the Hamlet, meaning like primordial or, you know, early. Yeah, it sounds like a caveman.
If only because it rolls right off the tongue.
Right, Hamlet.
Hamlet.
But some scholars actually believe Shakespeare himself wrote the Hamlet an earlier version of the Hamlet we have now, but there's still like speculation about that. He almost definitely wrote the title role in Hamlet for his fellow actor and friend Richard Burbage, who's the leading like actor of the time. So he's like the Meryl Streep of Shakespeare's day.
Burbage.
Thanks, Lauren. So in obviously in the like 400 years since its creation, the role of Hamlet has come to be considered kind of a rite of passage for for like serious, you know, acclaimed actors.
Almost like too much so. Like if you played it in high
like
school.
Like it's way too big of a deal.
Like you still talk about it like when you're 28. Like you guys, I played Hamlet when I was 15.
Like a guy who was like a quarterback on his high school football team who still talks about it. Yeah. According to Anne Thompson and Neil Taylor, editors of the Art and Shakespeare editions, Hamlet has been described as the world's most filmed story after Cinderella.
Huh.
So it hasn't beaten Cinderella yet, but it's getting up there.
Well, you can't beat the glass
slipper. Right.
So, yeah.
That's Cinderella is like a universal story, so.
Sure.
Yeah, that happens.
And so.
Sorry, Hamlet.
Yeah, sorry, Hammy. So I'm just going to do a story recap because it's kind of a long, complicated story, and I'm specifically highlighting things that we are talking about later in the podcast. I'm leaving out some details because, I mean, sometimes Shakespeare could have used an editor, and it gets kind of, his plotline gets kind of nuanced, I guess you could say. So Hamlet returns home to Elsinore Castle in Denmark from where he was in school in England at a school called Wittenberg. And he returns home because his father has passed away. And the new king to take over for his father will be Hamlet. So will be Hamlet's brother. The new king will be. It's hard for me to say the word Hamlet, I'm realizing. So the new king will be Hamlet Sr.'s brother. I didn't mention that Hamlet's father is named Hamlet as well, just in case it wasn't confusing enough. So Hamlet Sr.'s brother, Claudius, and Hamlet's mother have taken up a romantic entanglement, which has left Hamlet less than enthused. Hamlet returns home, still very much in mourning for the death of his father, and sees his mother happily with a new man, and he's kind of just invited to go back to school. They just say, Hamlet, it's not a big deal. Our castle's fine. I'm happy. Like, move on. Which isn't anything that Hamlet is ready to do. Hamlet is very much mourning his father, as he should be. And in other parts of the castle, we see Hamlet very much involved with Ophelia, a young noblewoman who they've just kind of begun their relationship. And Ophelia has a father who's a nobleman by the name of Polonius and a brother, Laertes. And then there's also this supernatural element to the play as the ghost of Hamlet Sr. returns to Elsinore and tells Hamlet that he has been killed by Claudius and that Hamlet's new lease on life is to avenge his death. So already Hamlet's dealing with a lot of stuff. Hamlet's dealing with all of these kind of betrayals he's seeing, all of these different actions that he doesn't agree with. And a ghost is visiting him and telling him, go kill this person. So, I mean, things aren't great for Hamlet. And then Hamlet begins, so in order to garner whether Claudius has actually, because I mean, how much can you trust a ghost who's coming to your house? Like, I don't know. Right. So Hamlet,
the ghost of Obi-Wan.
Yeah, he's always trustworthy. He's told me some stuff. That's but true. So Hamlet pretends to be mad, be going insane, so that he will be seen as less of a threat as he kind of walks around the castle and tries to make sure. Tries to gather like information about whether or not Claudius has actually killed him, and he devises this this plan to have a play of it's called The Murder of Gonzago,
and that's a real play, right?
It is. It's a real play, and it kind of a king comes in, a future king comes in and kills the king and takes the queen. And it's very much the same thing that Claudius is supposed to have done to Hamlet's father. And he believes that if Claudius watches all of this action on stage, he will immediately, if he's guilty, he'll leave, he'll react, and he'll get defensive. And that's how we'll know if Claudius really killed him. And of course, During the play, Claudius does react that way. Claudius leaves immediately and goes to his bedchambers and retires and, like, will not see anyone for the rest of the night. So Hamlet says, so obviously he has killed my father. He's acting very guilty. I'm going to go kill him. However, you see Polonius... Excellent plan. Murder is always the answer.
Oh, yeah.
So Polonius has been watching Hamlet and his kind of play at being mad and believing it. So
Hamlet, well, it's important to remember, Hamlet is like pursuing Polonius's daughter. So
absolutely.
Polonius is like not, you know.
Absolutely.
He's like suspicious of him already.
So Polonius follows him to the bedchamber and Hamlet ends up killing Polonius instead of Claudius, which then affects Ophelia negatively because her lover has killed her father. So just not a lot of great things are happening.
Ophelia really gets the short end of the stick.
She really does. And I like skimp over her story in this because we're going to talk about her later. Yeah. But finally, Laertes, Ophelia's brother, plots to kill Hamlet in a duel. And everyone dies at the end except Horatio.
Right. Horatio survives, and Fortinbras. But he hasn't been, like, in it at all, because he was, like, away in Norway, and then he like, comes in at the end.
Absolutely.
After everyone's dead, and just takes over. So that's a smart way to do it.
Yeah. So that's the story, as it has been. And now for some notable film adaptations.
I know you said that, like, you would recommend that someone go see a stage production.
Yeah, more so than, like, a
movie. Than a film. But if you had to recommend a film, which one would you go with?
I think the Brana is the most exact.
Yeah.
But
it's, like, 18 hours long.
Right.
So.
Or if you want campy, go for Hawk, because
the Ethan Hawke
2000s one is very 2000s.
And Bill Murray is Polonius in that one. So
enjoy.
Yeah. And Kyle MacLachlan is Claudius in that one. So
before he dates after he dates Charlotte from Sex and the City.
Right. And before he's the mayor of Portland.
He is a king. Great.
So you would go, you'd say go with the Hawk one?
I'd probably go Hawk.
I would too, actually. Yeah. I think that one.
It's the most fun.
Yeah. So it's set in modern day.
Yeah.
Which I really like because it kind of, I think it really shows like how people in Shakespeare's time would have seen it, at least the closest as we can get that, because it was like, you know, like it was contemporary for the people at that time. So if we put it in our contemporary times, does that make sense? Like, you can see it more. And it has Bill Murray. So
he's great.
I think that's,
and a very, lackluster performance by Julia Stiles.
Oh, yeah.
Who's trying really hard to, as they say, speak the speech. But it's really hard because everyone around her is very much versed in Shakespeare, and she's maybe newer to it.
Maybe. Well, difficult. She was really young.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
I mean, I like give her a little slack. But do you have major themes? that you think are important in Hamlet?
I think the most important for me is that of human folly and watching everyone around you making bad choices that you're kind of judging and saying, like, I don't want to do that and I don't want to do that. But then coming to find that that's kind of human nature to make those mistakes.
Yes.
But I think that that's something that Hamlet never really gets over, is all of the mistakes made around him.
And that he's maybe not even fully aware of.
And all the mistakes he's making as a person.
Right, as a person.
What about you? What are your favorites?
Yeah, I think I really like that one.
Yeah.
Of course, like, the ones that get discussed a lot are, like, the idea of, like, sanity versus insanity, because Hamlet is pretending to be mad.
Sure.
There's speculation that Ophelia is mad. You know, she appears to be.
Yeah. After all the action with her father.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's also the idea of performance.
Yeah.
Or facades, because it's kind of actually left up to speculation whether Hamlet really is going mad or if he's pretending.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's very much a theater choice,
up
too.
Up to the interpretation of, yeah.
Yeah.
But one that I really, like, focused in on was kind of the idea of, like, oneself or identity within the context of, I don't know if this is a word, but we'll just go with it, protagonism. So, like, the state of being a protagonist in a story or the main character.
If it's not already a,
it
a
should
word,
be, right?
Then we can, like, make it one right
Google
now.
Google didn't tell me it was misspelled, so it must be.
And Shakespeare made up so many words.
That's true.
So in honor of him, we can make up protagonism.
Right. So, because as I was, like, re-familiarizing myself with the play.
With your favorite play, do you mean?
Thanks, I hate it. it appeared to me that Hamlet seems to be, like, very conscious of his own role as the protagonist of a story.
Yeah.
Like a self-aware, like, almost meta-narrative.
Yeah.
I would argue that his actions and words are calculated and self-conscious, mm-hmm. as though he is acting a part, not just, like, the performance of madness, but that he's actually acting the part of a hero in a story.
Right.
He's positing himself as the main character. And to be fair, he's right.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Like, if us, you know, as viewers or readers of the play, like, he's the main character.
Yeah.
But within the world of this story, it ends up, like, his view of that ends up having, like, dire consequences.
Absolutely.
In his life and in the lives of people around him.
Yeah.
So I loved this quote from this short story author, George Saunders, says that we are all born with a series of built-in confusions, the most devastating of which is the belief that we are central to the universe. That is, our own personal story is the main and most interesting or important story, the only story, really.
Right.
Which is kind of Hamlet's attitude.
Yeah, certainly.
I was just going to read this real quick lines here. From Act 5, Scene 2. So this is, like, when Hamlet is, like, about to die. Mm-hmm, and he is talking to Horatio. So there's that part, but I'll skip to up here. So he's basically telling Horatio that, like, hey, I'm dying.
Yeah.
Can you, like, make sure that you go and, like, tell the world, like, my story
and
make sure that people hear about me. And then he says, right, yeah. I mean, Hamlet. And then he says, things standing thus unknown shall I leave behind me. If thou didst ever hold me in thy heart, absent thee from felicity a while, and in this harsh world draw breath in pain to tell my story. So he's saying, not just, like, make sure that you tell my story and that people know that I'm the hero.
Right.
But you need to also be really sad.
Yeah, make it convincing, you guys.
Make it convincing, because I'm a tragic hero.
I'm gone, like, and be upset.
Like, right.
Honestly.
Yeah. So, like, even as he's dying, he's thinking about his role as the protagonist of the story. And he's, like, trying to control how other people perceive his story, which is, like, one of my biggest pet peeves when authors do that. But anyway.
Absolutely.
So it's important to emphasize that Shakespeare himself, I would argue, but definitely the play warns us against having that attitude about ourselves.
Yeah.
Because when we do, when we're so focused on us being the main character of the story and everyone else is a side character in our story, then you're missing out on other people's lives.
Yeah.
On, you know, what other people are going through in their stories.
Sure.
So, you know, like at the, you know, best case scenario, you're just kind of missing out. But worst case scenario, it can be, you know, really, you know, really tragic to like miss out on someone else. You know, like their highs and their lows. So
right. It can also be pretty insufferable if someone's like, if every time you talk to someone, they're like,
it's just
all about what's
going on in my life. Yeah. Like you are just a side character in my life. Sorry.
You gotta work on it.
But in light of that theme, it's really interesting that there have been a couple of like really, like bigger, like high profile retellings that of the story that place characters other than Hamlet as in, you know, in like the main, in the protagonist role. So we have Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. If you guys know that, have you seen it? Has anyone seen it? Okay, I haven't seen it either.
Neither have we.
We kept like intending to watch it before this. Like, we need to know about this to talk about Hamlet, but we didn't end up watching it.
It gives away the ending right in the title. That's true.
Do they die though in the original play?
See, you have a point. I have no idea.
They go back to England, don't they? They don't die.
I don't know.
But anyway, Rose, if you guys know like what it's about, right? Like it's like Hamlet from their perspective. So it's like what Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are doing during the events of Hamlet, like when they're off stage.
Which is a lot of the original.
They're not in it that much.
No.
But then the other one that just came out recently is called Ophelia.
It was really good.
Yeah. Well,
it was really
enjoyable.
It was really campy and like, it was. Yeah. It was pretty.
It was very pretty. Which like is funny because in my high school English class where we read Hamlet, I wrote a paper that was about what Hamlet would be like from Ophelia's perspective. Oh. And that's exactly what this movie is. So they clearly copied my 10th grade English paper.
Yeah.
But Ophelia is really interesting.
Yeah.
So from her perspective, she is in the film, she is also performing her madness.
Yes. Yeah.
She's not actually going mad.
Yeah.
And Hamlet is as well.
Yeah.
So that like gives you a new view of like her scenes.
Yeah.
Because she's basically just like trolling everyone when she's like,
yeah,
like singing her songs and like giving flowers out to everyone. Do you guys know the scene?
Yeah.
So I feel like that's a really, what were your thoughts in Ophelia?
For what we're talking about in terms of she's also pretending, I felt like they became Elsinore's Bonnie and Clyde because they were very much working together.
Because they were like plotting together against Claudius rather than Hamlet being like isolated.
Like in the original Hamlet, I kind of always just felt so badly for Ophelia. Like Hamlet really turns on a dime with her and is one day very much amorous. And the next day, like, get thee to a nunnery.
Right.
We're done.
They took that line out of Ophelia.
Missed opportunity. Yeah. I think I really like that aspect of it. It was written for a young adult population. It's written as a YA.
Because the book was YA. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which makes it easier to digest, but then you also get a pretty movie, which is kind of silly. Like, Hamlet wears like full eye makeup.
Yeah, he wears guyliner.
Yeah.
And
it's a good look for him. Like, he looks, you know, haunting, but
his haircut was bad, though.
He could be like auditioning for like Blink-182,
right?
Like the next Mark Hoppus, maybe.
Which, let's be honest, Hamlet is kind of like,
it's true,
like a sad white boy.
Yeah.
And Ophelia is a manic pixie dream girl.
Yeah.
Like she's the original manic pixie dream girl. But speaking of Ophelia, have you guys seen Us?
It's so good.
It's so good. So, do you remember how the like Alexa like home assistant device in Us was named Ophelia? Do you guys remember that? Yeah. So Anna's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So I am going to give spoilers for Us, you guys. Mm-hmm, okay. You're okay with that? All right. So Ophelia in Us is a virtual assistant who, like Alexa, is programmed and expected to do what everyone tells her to do.
Yeah.
But it kind of backfires in that one scene. She has she has no agency or voice in her own fate.
Sure.
So depending on how we read Ophelia's character in Hamlet and her death, we can say that she similarly has no say in her own fate, or that she ultimately did take control of her agency by taking her own life, if that's how you interpret her death.
Sure.
But ultimately, both Ophelias are there for the convenience or to fulfill the desires of others.
Right.
Another classic reading of Ophelia's character in Hamlet is that she is really two different people. So one before and one after her madness. And then she's also seen as two separate people in the conflicting desires and duties that she has. So her desire to be with Hamlet and her desire to be dutiful and obedient to her father are kind of conflicting with each other. So this reading of the character falls in line with kind of the premise or theme of Us, the theme of having a double, or a shadow self, kind of a question of like, who is the real me? Who is the real us? And the idea that we can be our own worst enemy. And then Us also harkens back to the theme in Hamlet I was discussing of, seeing oneself as the center of a story. Kind of seeing the protagonist that we want to see, because we follow Adelaide for most of the movie and we see the story through her eyes. But and here's the huge spoiler, guys. We find out that Adelaide is not the little girl that we met at the beginning of the movie, whose story we thought we were going to be seeing. She was replaced by her tethered. And the Adelaide we've been following is actually the tethered. The double. So we're mistaken the entire movie about who the protagonist really is, because Adelaide is not who we thought she was.
Sure.
And then Red, I would say Red is much like Hamlet, because she is operating under the conviction that this story is about her and she is the protagonist. I would argue that she really is, Red really is the protagonist of Us, not just because she's the real Adelaide, quote unquote, but also because it's her initial choice that makes the story possible.
Right.
And it's her plotting and planning and actions that kickstart the main part of the story, in the present. So Red, like a Shakespearean tragic hero, like Hamlet, has a fatal flaw. She supposes Adelaide to be the antagonist because Adelaide has really has stolen Red's life. And because of this deep-rooted conviction of her own role in the story, Red is blinded to the reality of other characters' motivations, and the strength of those motivations. So she hasn't considered that though Adelaide is in the wrong, she still has human impulses and the instinct to survive and to protect herself and to protect the people she loves. And I think this is kind of the way that Hamlet views Claudius in the play, because Hamlet is so laser focused on his conviction that he is the hero and Claudius is the villain that he just doesn't see, because he hasn't considered that Claudius has his own motivations for what he's been doing. He just sees it as a very like black and white, almost like a cardboard cutout. Like not, he doesn't see Claudius as a full person who has reasons for doing what he does, even though what he does obviously is not good, but but he had reasons for it.
And to be fair, we don't really know how King Hamlet was as a king. Like, I mean, murder is still bad.
Murder is bad.
However, we don't really ever hear what King Hamlet's reign was like.
Right. And we, and I think, it's interesting when you talk about Gertrude in that context as well. Like, we don't know her motivations.
No,
like, she, you know, she probably, you know, in that time period, like, her decision to kind of marry Claudius was probably out of, like, survival. Because a woman in that, you know, in that time didn't really have any options. So that was maybe like the best choice she had.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting.
It's interesting to me that like all of these things that Hamlet is seeing everyone else do around him has then informed a few really good satirical comedies of the world.
Which is, like, you wouldn't think that Hamlet would would inform comedy.
That would, one such television series is Slings and Arrows. Has anyone seen Slings and Arrows?
Yes.
It's a Canadian television series.
It's a Canadian show, but it's on Amazon.
It's on Amazon.
I think.
It's Rachel McAdams' very first like big thing, and
before Mean Girls.
Yeah, way before Mean Girls. Yeah, and she the very first season is all influenced by Hamlet. So it follows
it's a theater company who's staging a production of Hamlet, and so it kind of follows all the actors and like the director and
artistic director
and the owner or the manager of the company as well. So,
and like the whole theater company is kind of failing. Like they don't have money anymore. Everyone's kind of realizing these people are ridiculous a little bit. So that, definitely was influenced strongly because it's a Shakespearean troupe that they follow.
Yeah. So it's like the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, but in Canada.
Yeah. And it's super funny and like Canadian humor is really interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would definitely say that link to the human folly is one that really impacts me whenever I read Hamlet. So Hamlet cries, "Oh, what a piece of work is man, and frailty thy name is woman," as he grapples with human nature. Hamlet, whether you believe he is truly having a breakdown or he has decided to put on a show, or a little of both, is certainly moved to act by all the actions that he's observing in those around him. He sees his mother marry his uncle and believes her to be without remorse for his recently deceased father. In some interpretations, he even reacts negatively to his own actions as he pursues Ophelia. So his only romantic relationship that he's watched has been that of Gertrude and his father. So then when his father dies and Gertrude aligns with Claudius, Hamlet gets really confused about the nature of romance, you could say, and about his own actions towards Ophelia.
But I mean, like, he's a grown man.
Absolutely. Yeah. So he pursues Ophelia and like negatively impacts her in such a major way. But I think you can really look at that self-loathing piece with Hamlet too. Like he hates everyone else around him, but I think he also dislikes that he loves Ophelia, and he dislikes that he's romantically.
He sees it as a weakness.
Absolutely. And it's in that self-loathing piece that you really see how it's influenced a few comedies. Oftentimes we get stand-up comics who are very influenced by their own self-loathing, and you get,
or who see themselves as their own protagonist.
Exactly. Terrible.
I'm just gonna be harping on that forever.
Yeah. So this brings me to a very tragic comedic figure who's the main part of Hamlet 2, the well-known
title
sequel
ever.
Hamlet 1. So first and foremost, Hamlet 2 is completely ridiculous. We follow Dana Marzix, a high school...
played by Steve Coogan.
Steve Coogan, who's a high school theater teacher who dreams of acting but can't do it very well and lives in a small town in Arizona. He's being cheated on by his wife and has no idea. He loses his job, and as a result, he writes Hamlet 2, and he decries, "Writing is hard." Like, yeah, it is. So he's kind of a very self-centered imbecile, in the same way that Hamlet's a little self-centered and can be kind of silly. So it does a really nice job of placing Dana in circumstances which are not unlike Hamlet. So if you removed most of the stakes of Elsinore and set it in a theater department of an Arizona high school, it would be like the same thing. So he watches his wife be unfaithful, a la what he believes Gertrude to be doing to his father. His boss fires him.
And what he
him.
Believes Ophelia would do to him.
Would potentially, because right. she's a woman and we're frail.
Yeah.
And his boss fires him, which is similar to the betrayal that Hamlet experiences. So I didn't go into this too much, but Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, Hamlet's two best friends, begin to work with Claudius and kind of take notes on, and Polonius, and kind of takes notes on whether Hamlet's actually crazy, which then Hamlet feels is a pretty major.
Then they're also trying to convince him to like just kind of leave Claudius alone and go.
Just go, yeah. Which Hamlet sees as utter betrayal.
Right.
Because it stops his...
It stops his mission.
Exactly. Yeah. And then... and finally, he grapples with the fact that he might not actually be a good actor or writer or artist by any means, which is similar to how Hamlet kind of grapples with his culpability within the play, I think. Hamlet 2 really shares the deep dive into the harrowing mistakes of humankind with Hamlet 1. Hamlet 2 takes these mistakes into the realm of the absurd instead of the realm of the supernatural in Denmark. But that disgust with human nature is kind of present in both. And then where I'm sure Hamlet, we can all agree, ends pretty negatively.
It depends on how you feel about the people who die.
Like, Rhonda's really excited that they're all gone, and Fortinbras is her favorite.
Fortinbras is my favorite.
But as it's placed in a comedy, Hamlet 2, Dana Marzix gets his dream. He gets to go is to that Broadway.
That's how you pronounce his name.
Yeah, his name is Dana Marzix. Just to be, like, ridiculous.
You have to pronounce all the consonants.
So he winds up in the Manhattan Theater. Which brings us to our next piece of
because
pop
the
culture.
Lion King was on Broadway. See connection.
The best transition I've ever heard. So I'm not going to bore you with a retelling of the Lion King because
you just heard it when we retold Hamlet.
Absolutely,
so.
Except with lions. But what I wanted to discuss here is how the Lion King addresses death and the afterlife and the ghost scenes within the story. So in Hamlet, King Hamlet returns to ask his son to avenge his death and is very much about revenge. And this ghost cannot move on to the other world because he's so preoccupied with just this negativity. However, in the Lion King, the ghost scenes are used to tell Simba that death is a natural part of life and that his father and all loved ones who die will remain with us and live in you. So this is an important distinction because Mufasa makes peace with the betrayal he experiences from Scar and allows himself to pass peacefully into that afterlife and the dimensions of rest that he deserves. He knows he was a good lion and that that is all that matters.
The goodest lion.
This telling makes an important change here, and therefore the actions of Simba are more about making peace with the past and saving the kingdom rather than revenge mm-hmm. and my family is the most important. It allows you to move on. Another important difference between the Lion King and Hamlet is in the character of Gertrude, so mm-hmm. Sarabi. Depending on the production, Gertrude is either depicted as someone who legitimately has fallen for Claudius, or she knows that this will be the way that she survives. But in the Lion King, Sarabi opposes Scar and does not... She's only with him... She's only in the same vicinity as him because they all live on Pride Rock.
Right.
However, she's not romantically involved with him, and she outright opposes his rule. And I think that just tells how much agency we couldn't give Gertrude because it right. wouldn't have rang true, and how much we can give to Sarabi and, like, women moving
forward.
As a
lion.
Yes. Ooh, what was your note about?
And then, so I just had, so if the Lion King is Hamlet, then that means that the Lion King 1.5 is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. Because
exactly.
the Lion King 1.5 follows Timon and Pumbaa, who are the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, during, like, the events of the Lion King when they aren't present for them. So it's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. and I've seen the Lion King 1.5. So, basically I have seen Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. So
I'm happy someone has.
It was like direct video, wasn't it?
Probably. It was a play too. Oh, Lion King 1.5.
Lion King 1.5. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tom Stoppard wrote
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
those names. I'm really good
Rosenstern at saying. Rosenstern and Guildenkrantz.
Oh, yeah, my favorites.
But extending from The Lion King, so The Lion King was actually also an inspiration for elements of Black Panther. If you've seen Black Panther, there's a lot of, especially like in the imagery and the aesthetics, yeah, there's some links there between Black Panther and The Lion King. But I also see there is that Shakespearean element in Black Panther as well.
Yeah.
It's not like, there aren't like direct like character connections quite.
Sure, sure.
I like, we could see T'Challa as Hamlet because like his father has died and he comes back.
Mm-hmm. More of a level-headed.
But there's
Hamlet.
No, yeah, yeah, there's no Claudius in the way though. So sure, that makes a huge difference.
And T'Challa like is a fine upstanding person.
Right. Like he has his, right, you know, he's not like, you know, a sad white boy. but there are like also kind of general Shakespearean elements at play in Black Panther as well. So we have the kind of like the traditional nine elements of Shakespearean tragedy are the tragic hero.
Yeah.
The struggle between good and evil. Hamartia, which is like the hero's fatal flaw.
Hey, Marcia.
Tragic waste, external conflict, internal conflict, catharsis, supernatural elements.
Sure, sure.
Which Black Panther has.
Yeah.
And comic relief. And similar to Hamlet, Othello, Romeo and Juliet, Black Panther consists of these nine basic elements. And I think it kind of makes these elements into a cohesive whole,
yeah,
and like more balanced,
yeah,
than like any other superhero movie has.
Sure.
Like, I don't know if superhero movies are trying to be Shakespearean, uh-huh, but if they are, Black Panther does the best at it.
I think we're all trying to be Shakespearean.
I think
a
so. So then we also have, so The Lion King is Disney. Marvel is owned by Disney. And
gosh,
Disney also owns Star Wars.
They're taking over the world.
They're taking over everything and using Shakespeare to do it.
Which I'm opposed by, but if they want to support our Patreon, they
yes,
totally could.
Yes, please do. It's only $1 a month.
Come on, Disney.
So I'm especially thinking in Star Wars of the scene in The Empire Strikes Back,
uh-huh,
where C-3PO is like in pieces and Chewie's trying to put him back together,
uh-huh,
and he holds up C-3PO's head like the skull in Alas, Poor Yorick,
yeah,
like Hamlet.
Yeah.
And that actually was a very intentional,
yeah,
choice from the director, Irvin Kershner.
What
That's
a name.
Fun name. But Star Wars is actually quite Shakespearean in general.
Sure, sure.
We talked about Shakespeare a little bit in our Star Wars episode, but we have like the sweeping epic story. We
yeah.
have family and political dramas. There's deaths and battles and betrayals. There's warnings from ghosts.
Yeah.
There are prophecies, forbidden love. Warnings and kind of cautionary tales about how power corrupts or how power,
yeah.
You know, wielded for the wrong reasons can have disastrous consequences.
Yeah.
And then in Hamlet and Star Wars, you also have very important father-son relationships.
Sure.
So especially with the characters of Hamlet and Luke Skywalker, I see a lot of similarities in their stories. So both of them initially are on a mission to avenge their father's deaths, and both also see the ghost of a father figure.
Uh-huh.
So Hamlet sees his father's ghost. Luke
yeah.
sees Obi-Wan's ghost,
yeah.
who is a father figure. And of course, they have like different, the ghosts have different purposes, kind
sure,
of like how
sure.
Mufasa has a different purpose from King Hamlet's ghost.
Yeah.
But they both end up, the ghosts both end up giving them information or keys to kind of guide them in their mission.
Yeah.
And then, so yeah, so I see the similarity between Luke and Hamlet more than Anakin and Hamlet.
Right.
But
yeah.
I think there are a lot of similarities between Anakin and Hamlet as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, yeah.
So I actually just got this from The Art of Tragedy, which is like a like a really best blog name ever. So they're talking about the similarities between Anakin and Hamlet. And they say that both of these two characters are aware of their fate.
Right.
Yet their choices reflect an effort to avoid it.
Uh-huh.
Hamlet goes mad and spends much time contemplating and procrastinating his vengeance, while Anakin completely disregards the prophecy, like about the chosen one.
Sure.
And he chooses what he believes to be his own path. His fall to the dark side can be compared to the madness of Hamlet. In both conditions, render them unable to achieve their final purpose. So that's both right. of them have that fatal flaw.
Right.
And then, of course, it's also well known that George Lucas drew from the work of Joseph Campbell, The Hero's Journey, in The Hero with a Thousand Faces.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Campbell drew inspiration from, among other things, the stories of Shakespeare yeah. when he was writing about The Hero's Journey. So, Shakespeare is like the grandfather of Star Wars. Uh-huh. Right? That makes
Absolutely.
Sense, right? And then, you know, Hamlet and Star Wars both have sword fights.
Yeah.
So it has my vote. Star Wars also has very clear counterparts to the Hamlet characters, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Yeah, it does.
In the two droids, C-3PO and R2-D2. So also Timon and Pumbaa.
Uh-huh.
And this Rosencrantz and Guildenstern thing, like those two guys, is like a trope that
TV trope.
And like
yeah.
all, you know, all kinds of movies and TV. We see it everywhere. So like some of our favorite, those uh-huh. two guys, you guys can probably think of like those two guys somewhere, like Kenan and Kel. Well, they had their own show, but,
Madeline and Louise from Gilmore Girls.
Yes.
The two hosts of this podcast.
Right. Phil and Lil from Rugrats.
Yeah.
Are those two guys?
Troy and Abed from Community.
Uh-huh. Grizzin.com from 30 Rock.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Karen
yeah. and Gretchen from Mean Girls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, those two guys is like two characters who are really just there to kind of tell you what's happening in the story
yeah.
or to just kind of like gently help move the plot along, but they're not really that involved with the story.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the criteria yeah. for those two guys. But
do you want to tell him as our ending note, the Nickelodeon?
Oh yeah. So
this
I had
my
this
favorite thing.
Well, if you guys have thoughts on this too, though, like we want to like yeah. get that in here. So I said that Kenan and Kel is like if those two guys got their own show. So it's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. So that means that all that would be Hamlet. And then the Amanda show is Ophelia. Right?
So we're all influenced. Even
so
Nickelodeon.
It all goes back to Hamlet.
It all
everything.
Comes back. Does that mean you hate everything?
Yes. what? It is true.
We have
yeah.
verification.
My
brother's
saying, yes, yeah. it's true. Yeah, but then we also just wanted, if anybody, like, if you guys have
opinions, thoughts,
Hamlet,
feelings,
or anything that we talked about or anything we haven't talked about, like, yeah, let's hear it.
If you're drawing parallels between Black Panther and Hamlet, wouldn't Killmonger be Hamlet?
Yeah, he would, because he's the one whose father was murdered by his uncle.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he comes back and he sees T'Challa as a usurper
sure.
to the throne. And
sure.
so he's coming in. Oh.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
That totally makes sense. Cool. Yeah. Anyone else?
Anyone else have a thought?
Anyone want to say hi to the listeners?
To the people? You're all here. All our listeners are
all
here.
All our listeners are here.
So therefore, I mean, say hi to yourselves.
Are you guys going to listen to this when it's like the recording?
You might hear some of your laughs
yeah.
on here.
We can like, again, we don't know how to end this.
We're so good
we're
at
We're really
ending
bad.
Them.
Yeah. We should write them out. Like we always like write
we
out what we're going to
do
for the intro. And,
I know.
But we never write out what we're going to do for the ending. Cool.
You guys.
But basically like... Yeah, thank you for coming.
Thank you
I
for
hope
coming.
This wasn't a waste of your time. And
Yeah. Thank you to King's Books.
Thank you to King's Books. Aaron, you didn't bring snacks.
I didn't bring snacks.
So if, what? What's coming next? Yes. Well, oh, we can also tell them we recently guested. Is that a?
That's
is guest a verb?
That's how the professionals say it. They like
we
guested
on a podcast called Don't Call It a Book Club. And that episode will be released on Thursday.
It'll
so
be
you can
dropping
listen to us on there.
Thursday.
It'll be dropping. Uh-huh. Yeah.
We did what they call a hot take.
Yeah, or like they call it a rant. Yeah. So
a rant, yeah.
We talked for like 30 minutes about something really interesting. So but then after so you can listen to that, and then our next episode is
as old as time.
Yes. Are you going to keep going?
No, that was it. Beauty and the Beast
okay.
is what it is.
Beauty and the Beast, but like the original fairy tale.
Uh-huh.
Right. So, you know, we'll talk about like other, you know, adaptations of Beauty and the Beast, and then other things that have been influenced by
Beauty
and the Beast.
We might have some guest stars.
We might have a guest. Yeah. Okay. If our schedules line up. Yeah. And then that'll be the last episode of season one.
Season
and then in
one.
September, we'll start season two.
Of our baby pod.
Of our, yeah. Cool. But, okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Did you hear the clapping?
Guys, they're clapping for us.
All right, guys. Well, if you're listening at home,
we hope you clapped.
We hope you clapped as well in your car or wherever you're listening.
Yeah.
All right, guys. signing off.
Bye.
Bye.